Hi, I'm Eric, also known as Trekkie V47, from the Ranger Command Power Hour and the Starfleet Escape Podcast. You're listening to another great Four-Eyed Radio product. For more shows, check out foureyedradio.com. It's Morphin' time!
Aye! It's the Ranger Command Power Hour!
Today on the Power Hour, episode 217, Ranger Command interview the Supermassive 2023 team, recorded on May 23rd, 2023. Welcome to the Ranger Command Power Hour on the Four-Eyed Radio Network. It's time to Ranger Up with your host. I'm Eric, also known as Trekkie B47. Today, I'm interviewing the team for Supermassive 2023. By the time this releases, it'll already be out. So this is the one-shot crossover special with Radiant Black, Rogue Sun, and the Dead Lucky. We've got Kyle Higgins, writer for currently Radiant Black and No One. We've got Ryan Parrott, the creator and writer for Rogue Sun. And then we got Melissa Flores, writer and creator for The Dead Lucky, as well as the current writer for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and the upcoming Power Rangers Unlimited Hyperforce. We also have Matt Groom, the creator and writer for Infernal Girl Red, as well as the upcoming writer for one of the Power Rangers 30th Anniversary special coming up, one of the stories in that, as well as Michael Basudel, designer and editor for Radiant Black, Ordinary Gods, Rogue Sun, Dead Lucky, No One, Superman, like everything.
So, everything. Melissa's also writing Pink. Radiant Pink with Megan Camarena.
Yeah. So welcome everyone back to Ranger Command.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. So since this is coming out after the Supermassive special, I mean, we can literally go into it. Spoilers abound. So first off, this new Supermassive special is pretty much just a snapshot in time to where all these characters are currently at the last point we've seen them in their series. Considering how long it takes to make a special like this, can you guys go through the process of how you're able to plan and then make sure all these characters meet up exactly where you needed them to for this special?
Yeah, it was definitely a challenge. We're fortunate in that it's early enough in our universe and we all had pretty kind of firm understandings of our characters and directions of our, you know, books early on enough that stuff like Supermassive last year and Supermassive this year is possible, but it doesn't make it necessarily easy. So we basically started in, what did we say? Was it August that we started writing or starting to break like the actual, like what it's going to be. And there were decisions to make on certain things that we hadn't made yet. You know, Ryan was still figuring out Caleb. He knew he was going to be doing this, but he wasn't sure necessarily. He wasn't firm yet on who Caleb was going to be. I wasn't sure how I was going to be landing. I mean, I knew we were ending issue 24 with the, you have to make a choice between Nathan and Marshall, but tonally, how to bridge where that was going to land with what this story was going to become and where they were at and everything like that. And certainly Bibiana has gone through like a pretty radical transformation in these six issues as well. So it was pretty interesting very early on as we were talking about like, well, this is where everyone is going to be at. And yet none of us had written any of it. So we were writing Supermassive with their future status quos while also writing the issues building to those status quos at the same time. So we used to have this happen to us all the time in the bad office when I was doing stuff there, where you were writing for like three artists at the same time, like at three different points in the story, just because of either events or schedules or double ship. Ryan, you had that on Rangers a ton too, I'm sure.
Fun.
Yeah. But so we're well prepared for things like this.
I checked the emails. I have us first talking about this in April.
Yeah, April.
Wow.
That's the first email I have that says Supermassive 2023. So
yep.
And that's a while ago.
I think August, because I arrived in my hotel in Pasadena for Power Morphicon and immediately jumped on a Zoom call that was like, I think when we sort of really had to start like
right
nailing it down, but we were talking before then. Yeah. I think we actually like everyone will talk about, you know, not knowing what was going to happen and firming it up. I think we actually got quite lucky because everyone was about to take a pretty big swing with their books. Like Melissa coming out of the end of her first arc, Kyle going into this vote, Ryan having the situation with Caleb happening. It felt like everyone knew the swing that they were about to take. And that, like, if it was just sort of the end of, oh, the end of a regular arc and then we're going into a new arc, that can be harder to plot. But because everyone was like, okay, I've got to hit this ball the month before, we at least knew where they'd be, even if we didn't quite have all the details in place.
Well, you know, the irony is I don't know that any of us have ever done an arc in the Massiverse that ends in a regular place. Like every arc has ended, even Infernal Girl Red book one, which is coming out big mass market edition here in the next couple of weeks, Matt, right? Do you remember it's June? Do you know it offhand?
7/10
Something like, yes. It's the middle of June. That I won't spoil how that ends for anyone who hasn't read it, the serialized edition yet, but like there's an ending there that is, I think, in line with what I'm saying here. I don't think it's incongruous. In a weird way, though, knowing what those moments are does make it easier to like signpost for status quo for doing things like this. But
it definitely makes you sort of like have to do it. You know, like I think the thing as a writer on any of this stuff is like you'd think you know where your story's going or you have an idea. But like the minute you have to actually put like a flag in the ground is terrifying. And I think that was like because we had Supermassive, it was like we had to start making choices earlier than I know I would like to, because I like to wait until, you know, the lettering passed at the very last issue. but yeah, like that was the part that was interesting. I do, and maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I do think like the first major talk we kind of had this might have been at C2E2 when we were all downstairs at the bar and kind of like, right? And we were spitballing like these comic books we always wanted to write. And then we started talking about, I think that was one that we first were like, oh, I think we're actually going to do Supermassive 2023. Like it felt like that was the moment where it wasn't just a, that would be cool. That was a, well, we're going to do this now. Yeah.
Well, I feel like it was announced. Like,
was it then?
It was announced like a couple weeks later. Yeah. Because well, Michael did the graphic at Power Morphicon.
Right. Then
we announced it at San Diego. I guess what we're learning is that Ryan didn't know that it was real several months after it was already on the schedule and officially definitely happening and probably a contract was signed.
Yeah, that's probably true. It's probably true. I'm still not convinced it's actually real, by the way. Just like
I've read it. It's real.
Oh, good.
It printed awesome. I highly encourage readers to snag a physical copy. And we can say this, by the time this airs, this will probably be more public, but we're actually reprinting Supermassive 2022. We're doing a $3.99 edition that also has some really cool introduction to the Massiverse back matter. That's actually on FOC right now. So the orders will already close by the time this episode comes out. But we're designing it also as like a really good kind of just introduction to the Massiverse in general. So yeah, so we'll have that for anyone who wants to see what we did last year in the same format.
Very nice. That's awesome. With Supermassive 2023, obviously more characters juggle with significantly more backstory now. What were the most important details that you wanted to highlight for each of your characters? If someone was picking up or getting into the Massiverse for the first time, what did you want to get across for each of your characters?
I think for BB especially, I think she's the newest character. She's obviously, this is her first round in. So it was one of those things where it was an opportunity to define who she is as a character, what she wants, and also what her power set was. And that was something that we really wanted to, I mean, you'll see there's like a whole panel where she's like explains exactly what her powers are just to try to make it as easy as possible. What was really cool about that is that all the characters are so unique and so interesting that they each stand out in their different ways. And so it was easy for them to kind of slot together, but still have their own unique personalities. But for Vivi especially, you know, we really wanted to emphasize the soldier aspect of her, the feeling of loss that she was dealing with and the grief, and also the fact that she was now working for Moro. And those were relatively easy to establish. And then it was just a matter of letting the character be in the story and react the way she would.
Also, it was really important that she and Thomasin flirt.
Yes, that was also a big thing. If I don't get hot girls flirting in my comic books, then what's the point?
What are we doing for sure?
Yeah, what are we doing?
Create your own. What does create your own even matter for them?
For Rogue Son, I think I wanted to keep the snark in there. Even though Caleb's now sort of in control of Dylan's body, I wanted to make sure that we at least had that same kind of energy still in the book, because it would be very easy to sort of turn Caleb into, like, you know, the Rogue Son into a very, very boring character. So it was nice to be able to try and keep Dylan to flip, you know, the conceit of the story has always been somebody in the suit and then somebody yelling in your ear and just making your life hell. And I just like that we were able to flip it and make it so that now it's the stoic guy in the suit and the annoying kid in the ear. So it's just, as long as we can keep the status quo the same but different.
For Radiant Black, you know, I look at something like Supermassive as both a natural kind of continuation from our books, as you see in the way that our status quos are reflected. But at the same time, it's also designed to be, I think we would all agree, we want it to be standalone, a standalone story and adventure. And so that means making sure that, like, you're hitting on, as you say, Eric, like the core of the character, like, what are you trying to convey about these characters for anyone brand new picking this up? And the thing that was really cool about this year, Supermassive compared to last year's, is that I was able to actually have Nathan and Marshall in it together, because I actually think the core of Radiant Black is really about these two millennials, these disillusioned millennials and their relationship. Like, the friendship between Nathan and Marshall really is. I mean, the book, it has been a two-hander up to this vote moment here. And that's what I think makes the vote so compelling, is because we have designed this as a true two-hander. And what does it mean when it can't be anymore? Mm-hmm. But that was important to me, was to really kind of showcase Nathan and Marshall's friendship here. I was a little worried the tone was going to whiplash too much coming out of Radiant Black 24, but we found a way to, like, thread the needle. And I'm actually really happy with how it all reads. Now, if you were to read Radiant Black 24 and then read Supermassive, mm-hmm. and look at it that way. But yeah, I would say just really highlighting Nathan and Marshall, and kind of even in their approaches and how they do different things as they're navigating this situation, was the number one thing for me.
Matt, I know we don't necessarily have Infernal Girl Red that we knew from the Kickstarter, Cassia. So now we have Thomason. Can you tell the audience a little bit more about her and how she kind of fits into the Infernal Girl Red part of the Massiverse?
Yeah. Well, I think when we were putting this together, we knew that we probably didn't want to feature Cassia, just because in her series, Cassia is still kind of catching up to the events of the last Supermassive, and we didn't want to create a super complicated timeline. But when we realized where the story was going and when it would be set, we saw that there was an opportunity to see an earlier version of an Inferno Girl Red. That led to the creation of Thomason, which served a few purposes. It allowed us to have a big surprise in the story, which I think is, like, an important part of doing big events. It allowed us to have something of an antagonist in the story, and it mm-hmm. also allowed us to expand the Inferno Girl Red mythology, or at least let people see a bit more of it. And it worked out really well, actually, because this is all elements that had been planned for Inferno Girl Red but don't appear in book mm-hmm. one, because we were sort of, like, laying track for the future. But nothing had to change from our plan to Inferno Girl Red to accommodate this. With Thomason, it was more it was my job to make sure that in creating this new character, we had someone that felt like lived in and fleshed out, but also fit in with and served the thematic arcs of everybody else, and mm-hmm. felt like she mirrored in her own way, with variations, this idea of trying to process loss and letting go of the difficulties of your past. Yeah, you sort of, like, plug all those elements together and you've got Thomason.
I think, though, too, Matt, you do something really interesting with Thomason with regards to her situation, and in some ways alluding to some mythology, some world building within Infernal Girl Red, just with regards to where her powers are at currently and what's at stake if she is to use them again. That's by design, certainly, but...
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that has been intended to be part of the series from jump and will play a bigger part in Cassia's story going forward. But this was a way for us to give readers who choose to pick up Supermassive a chance to sort of explore some of those elements early and get a
some broader context, which is something that I wanted to do with all of the Supermassives. Like last time we got a bit of a peek into the future of where Cassius' story is headed, and this time it's more of a peek into the past, but it's always just revealing more of what people will already get to experience moving on to Cassius' story, but it's a little earlier and it's perhaps in a slightly different framing, so you get something unique.
I love that it was so unexpected and kind of out of the blue, because definitely leading up to this, you guys were like, oh, sorry, you know, Cassie is not going to be in this, but it wasn't necessarily, well, Infernal Girl Red's not going to be in this, wink. So yeah, definitely really appreciated how that played together with the story.
I do want to bring up that now that an Infernal Girl Red has killed a Rogue Son will have to kill an Infernal Girl Red at some point down the line.
That's fair.
That seems like fair.
As revenge.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
We have to do this.
I mean, we now know that they have a shared connection in an individual. So yeah, there's potentially roots for that in the future. Absolutely.
What I really liked about this Supermassive go-around was that it felt like an RPG quest. There are these different rooms and these different puzzles. What was the inspiration for that story instead of doing like, oh, we got to defeat X type of bad guy?
Well, we talked about a lot of different kind of permutations of what a second Supermassive could be. There are some sequels that I won't publicly name here that we've threw around as the thing we don't want to be and do, sequels we all probably know and are have been disappointed by it's in our lives. And so it's tricky because you want to do something different, a little different genre wise. You know, we really kind of thought of the first Supermassive as it ended up kind of feeling almost like a Doctor Who special to us. That sense of adventure, but still, you know, scope and scale and everything. This time, with the nature of where the characters were at as well, and trying to decide certain things, the idea of building the story around, as you say, like a quest, essentially, worked really, really well for what we had to navigate with not only everyone and their characters and their status quos, but also what we knew we wanted to do with changing of a genre, mm-hmm. and you know where we wanted everyone to end up by the end of it. And so everyone basically is looking for a magic fix in one way or another, and so that felt very kind of on point here to basically use it as an actual framing device narratively for the whole crossover.
There's a risk you run into with a crossover story that you just like everyone meets up and then they have a bit of a fight and then they get over the fight and they team up and they fight a bad guy and they beat the bad guy and story over. And like, those are fun. And there's a lot of stories that fit exactly that mold that I really love. But it was important to us to be like, okay, we've done that one. Let's make sure this book is different. And that's like, you know, the first one is kind of science fiction-y. And it was like, well, let's make this one fantasy, let's twist genre. The first one is like it leans on Radiant Black stuff and Inferno Girl Red stuff, so let's lean on some Rogue Sun stuff instead. And like, really part of the goal up front is like, how do we make sure that these feel like completely different reading experiences?
Mm-hmm. Let's be clear, Dead Lucky was just stoked to be there. They could have told a story about them going to Pizza Hut and she would have been like, I'm in.
We were really pleased with how that all turned out, though, because Melissa and I had a conversation early on about like, this has to be a book where she has a spotlight, you know, and has a sequence to shine. And like, when she takes over and goes into command mode, and it's this really cool usage of her powers and kind of showcase, like, I'm very happy we were able to, it worked so well, just for the story, but also for her and where she's headed in her second arc.
Me too.
I want to be clear that I've pitched to Matt like 3 times that we should do an alternate universe special where they all just work in a grocery store called Supermarket, and Matt refuses to go for it. Like zero stakes.
I've never said anything but total encouragement for that.
That sounds amazing.
That sounds like a good backup, like a Marshall School of Business running recurring segment, one-page comics of Mativerse characters at the supermarket.
I think that's our foray into webcomics. It's our Supermarket AU webcomic.
Matt, it could be like our Kaiju Steps.
Oh yeah.
TM. We're doing this. We're doing this at some point. Now we've trademarked it. That's legal. That's how the law works. You can't argue with
me. I mean, those are our characters. We do have the rights to those. Like, I think we're
just
we're
being careful, Matt.
Actually, that does remind me. What was the? It's hard to see in the finished book, unfortunately, because of there's a word balloon tale that had I known it was there, we would have nudged. Matt, what was the name of the grocery store, the market that the door to the Grail is actually inside of?
It's named Veg of Tomorrow, and their tagline is buy, save, repeat. I'm so proud. Honestly, I think the best thing I've ever written. My career is entirely downhill from here.
So it would actually be a vegan ice cream section that they go to.
No, they don't only sell
it's not a vegan market?
Look, it can be.
This pod's gone off the rails.
We'll work this out off air, and then we'll come back with the official canon, okay? We don't want to be like laying down lore live.
I had plans for it in the Massiverse. I'm just a little surprised now, and I'm just going to have to do some rewriting, that's all.
Look, we'll reconvene and make sure that you're accommodated.
So moving to the art for Supermassive 2023, Daniele was the perfect choice for this, clearly. What was it like working with him again, and how did you guys feel about seeing this come to life as the inks came in? And also the colors by Walter Biamonte were just, this whole issue popped and was super colorful, and it really felt like that RPG genre that everyone was aiming for.
It's really delightful to, like, obviously, you know, your Power Rangers podcast, like, everyone here knows Daniele, yeah. Right? Like, I think Kyle and Ryan have both written for him. Melissa was at Saban when he was drawing on Power Rangers. Matt and I have followed his work since Pink. Like, we all know him really well. But it was still really delightful to, like, it feels like seeing something new because we got to bring him over and work on our stuff with us. And yeah, man, every page is just, I talked about this on another podcast, but it's like, there's a double page spread in the script where we were like, they're surrounded by demons. And you expect that he's going to do like, maybe all the front ones will be like silhouetted, or he'll draw a couple and sort of copy paste and transform the groups around a little. And then he sent in the layout and it's like, I think he's going to draw a bunch of demons. And then he sent in the inks and it's like, he just drew a bunch of demons.
Every single
demon. And they're all, and he just did it.
Well, and the other thing to talk about is that he really pushed his style on this story, I would say. You know, he and I, we did a little, an 8-pager together for Shift last year. But outside of that, we haven't worked together since Shattered Grid. And so it's really cool for me to see him like coming out of this. It's like it's pushed so far, and then Walter comes in and takes it up 10 notches into this like insane anime rendered skies territory that just, I don't know, it feels like it fits so well with the genre that we're playing with here without it being too like too much of a imitation of something. Like sometimes you see stuff that's set in the past, for example, and so it's done sepia tone and it's done too, it's just too rigid, you know, it's like too much of a hat on a hat. But Daniele and Walter doing their kind of anime influenced superhero stuff here for this fantasy story just feels like the just awesome perfect fit.
Yeah, when I saw Walter's colors, I remember thinking, like, it's so colorful, but yet it's muted, and it feels like the blacks are dark, and there's, like, weight to it, you know, like a Fincher did an anime, you know, like, I was like, that was the thing I really like, because sometimes you can go to, when, you know, having worked on Power Ranger books, you know, sometimes those colors can get a little, like, wow, that's a lot, and this one, I never felt like that did that. I always felt like, even, that it was always grounded in sort of reality, and I really like that.
Well, and every one of the superheroes that we have their own very specific color palettes and very specific looks when it comes to the books. And I think it's a, you know, once you get them all together, it's a challenge to really make them feel true to themselves, but also a cohesive whole. And I think that's what Walter and Daniele did. Like, they all felt like they belonged in the same world. And I thought that was really cool.
We get, after the end, after the credits page, we kind of get like an after credits panel, And when Kyle sent me Supermassive, I was like, wait, is that who I think it is? Can you maybe tell us a little bit more about this tease? Or is this something working towards a bigger goal? Or is this just fun?
Yeah, so this is Shane. Shane is a completely new original character that I own.
Swan.
And so Shane died and came back from hell, and now he's got magic powers.
I think you're confused. This is medieval Shane. He's a
sorry. Yes. Sorry.
I mean, this is Spawn.
Yes.
This is Spawn.
This is medieval Spawn.
Wait, who's Spawn? I'm kidding.
Loves chains, hates selfies.
So tease of Supermassive 3.
I mean, wouldn't that be cool?
Wouldn't that? This was like my favorite thing in the whole thing. Like when Kyle told me this was even a possibility, I was like, yes, 100% please. Cause like I've always said this, like the reason I got into Image was I followed all those original artists over. And I remember buying Spawn number one, and I bought every issue of Spawn for a really long time. I was so dumb. I was like, hey, mom, you're Christian. You should totally read these books. You're going to love this story. No idea that she'd be like, you're not reading this book anymore. And then I'd have to sweep them from the comic book store every time. So, yeah. But I love Spawn. And I was just thrilled that we get even that. What I also loved is it made the cover that we got to do for was
that the variant yeah, covers.
For me,
it got
to make my cover almost canon. So like I was psyched. But yeah, it was a really great opportunity. And thankfully, Todd did us a solid on this one. And yeah, it'd nice. Be fun to play again in the future. But we'll see.
I'm not promising or confirming, but I'm also not denying a medieval Spawn, medieval Massiverse connection here. So yeah, this was something, gosh, I don't even remember who threw this out there first time. But it was something that this was a tag that Matt wrote. And it's something that is, you know, look, we love the promise of the premise. And the fact that we had two medieval era characters that are really integral to the story, despite having not a ton of page space in that era, it felt like, well, this is like a really cool, like if we could do this, if we get Todd to go for it when we explain to him what we're trying to do and everything. Oh man, this would be a fun one. So
I guess it's worth saying on that note that Todd's reaction to this was incredibly gracious and immediately like, yeah, that sounds great. Go for it.
Yeah.
With like no preconditions or anything like that, just entirely supportive. So I think we're very grateful that he backed us in. And obviously he's the Titan here, and we're the ones who benefit from this little meeting. So yeah, very cool of him to let us do this at very least. And then, you know, who knows from here.
He's the Todd father.
Anything else you guys want to speak of on Supermassive, just in terms of, did this fulfill something for your character going forward? Can you take a thread from this particular one shot and carry those repercussions going forward?
Yeah, I think for BB, the way we set up that first arc and where it ends in the Dead Lucky, she's obviously in a really grief-stricken place. And when we pick up issue 7, she hasn't had a lot of time to deal with that grief. So initially, Supermassive 2023 is her processing her grief over losing Eddie. That is the moment for her to be able to do that. And I think that's really special for her because in her own books, she doesn't have a lot of time to do that. She's dealing with a lot of other things. And here, she's surrounded with people that maybe know death a little more than the people that she hangs out with at home, which are, you know, corporate stooges and well-meaning cops. And so for her to be able to, you know, talk to somebody like Tomlinson and mess around with the Radiance and kind of just do this thing that has nothing to do with all the baggage she has at home, but also still deal with what she's dealing with in terms of her guilt with Eddie passing, I think it's really special for her. And it's not something that, you know, if you only read The Dead Lucky and don't read Supermassive, that you're going to be like, what's missing? There's this whole chapter that's been missing. But it's a nice little layer and thread to her character that really gives her a sense of purpose and a real headspace, a real idea for what her head looks like when she goes into issue 7 for Dead Lucky.
Yeah, I think without getting too into things, because issue 25 takes place now after our vote has concluded, and it's also the launch of the Catalyst War. So there's a lot that happens there. But the fact that Nathan and Marshall are going to realize by the end of this story that, yeah, we're going to have to make this tough choice that we really don't want to have to make. And there's no magic mm-hmm. fix for that, is something that it's for sure an element that is important to the Radiant Black book, literally, for our very next issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And story-wise for Rogue Son, like, I think, you're getting a glimpse of the new status quo. Like, this is what the book's going to be going forward. So, and I think I like the fact that you're going to see, hopefully, with this adventure, you know, it starts off with Dylan being very angry at Caleb for what he's done. And I hope by the end of it, you get to see that there's like a little bit more of an understanding. Like, Dylan's slowly starting to understand who this guy is, and maybe he's a little more complicated than we've seen in the past. But I would say, like, creatively, like, just from like a writing perspective, like, this was a really hard one for us, I felt like, in regards to the first one. Our books were all starting off new. And so, or most of us, like, Radiant Black was just doing its own thing at that point. But like, when we came in, it was a lot of new books and a lot of new characters. And so this one was just the balancing act of being able, I guess I'll say this, I can understand why the big two have one editor and they own all the characters, so they can have one person making all the decisions. That's very helpful. But I do got to give a special, I haven't said it, but Matt, I know, did a lot of work, a lot of extra work on this thing, and saved my bacon a few times on this, and really helped keep the story together. And there were many meetings where I'd be like, I don't understand what's going on here. And then you'd explain it to me, and I'm like, I'm an idiot. Thank you very much. So, like, I really appreciated how much you did on this. And even though Inferno Girl Red technically wasn't in it, I really felt like this was such a big part of you pushing it forward.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
The spine of this definitely came because of Matt and Michael. Like, they definitely were the
MVPs. Oh, yeah, Michael too, sure.
Both of us benefited very much from not having monthly issues out next month. Mm-hmm. So we could sort of like step back and take that, you know, 100-mile up view and help everybody else sort of get the pieces together, because, you know, you guys are all navigating with much more difficult nightmare, which, as we discussed, was planning this thing out while your books were still like way behind in the timeline. So yeah, Michael and I were able to step up and help out with that, which is fun.
I also really appreciated the Star Trek Generations shout out. I mean, Ryan, that was you, nope. Right?
Mm-mm.
No?
That was me.
Was Matt.
Oh, man. Nice. No, I really appreciated that.
That wasn't for you, Eric, but when I wrote it, I did think, I think Eric will get a kick out of this.
For sure. I was like, this explains what's going on perfectly. I got it.
Right? And also, like, foreshadows the end really well, I thought. It's like, he gets to, like, jokingly be like, oh, I hope this doesn't end as, like, depressing as that one. And then, it does.
I think everyone should definitely check out Supermassive, especially if you're a Massiverse fan. You can't miss this one. But because I am a Power Rangers podcast, I want to get that little bit in. The 30th anniversary special was just announced, and we've got three of the writers here. Can you tease a little bit about what story you're working on, or maybe like a one or two sentence kind of synopsis of what your story is about?
Yeah, I can do that. I can start. My one is a story that spans 10,000 years and tells the story of Alpha 5 over those 10,000 years.
Melissa?
I have what was unknowingly a controversial story. I explore, I really, really adore Tommy and Kat, and I wanted to explore their relationship over the course of them first breaking up to go to college, and then eventually having JJ.
I don't know if I can say what mine was. Who cares?
Ryan, I think now with those two, people have enough information
to
determine which one is yours.
Wait, so my, I don't know, is my title out? It doesn't matter.
They've mentioned ever so slightly, like,
I think people have figured it out.
Yeah, it's about, it's an ode to Ernie. I'm doing an ode to an unappreciated character, just a small thing about him and his impact on the Rangers and all that stuff. So that was something that was a lot of fun, and I was very, very happy to do.
I wrote a story where the Power Rangers meet medieval Shane, but they wouldn't. I just, Boom won't return my emails. I don't know what's happening. I just, like, I thought it was really cool, but no one would go for it. So
they're sending it to their Kaboom box.
So what is next? What's the next thing coming out for each of your titles, and when can we expect that?
I've got dates. So do you want me to take this one, guys?
Please do.
Please.
Okay. Radiant Black 25, July 17th, alongside Radiant Black Volume 4, the first shot of the Catalyst War. This issue is nuts, and people will not want to miss it. Marcello is turning in, like, career great work. Kyle and Joe's script is pick up this issue. You don't want to miss it. July 19, Rogue Sun, issue 13. The first issue of a brand new status quo. Oh, what is there to say that, like, hey, someone else is in control of Dylan's body right now. That's bad. Let's find out how bad that is. Together, as friends. Great sell.
And a broken family.
July 3rd, the Dead Lucky issue 7. Again, first issue of a brand new arc, a brand new status quo. BB is working with Morrow. For how long, in what way, who knows? The last page is the biggest reveal we've done in this book yet, and I cannot wait for people to find out what is going to happen in this arc. Inferno Girl Red Volume 1 is out June 7th. If you haven't read this yet, come on, what are you doing? You've had like three ways to read it by now. But this is the way. Finally, pick it up in trade. It's a gorgeous thing. My comps just arrived today. In No One, issue, I think, has just come out or is just has, three just, has come just come out. Yeah. So issue 4 will be out on June 19th, maybe. No, a little later.
Wait, June 19th? No, it's June. I don't know. It might be July.
Issue 4 will be out a little towards the end of June or early July. we're approaching the halfway point. The mysteries are getting even more complicated. Our characters' lives are getting even more entangled in this whole situation. There's a podcast. It's got famous people in it. Read No One. Come on. Radiant Pink issue 5, I think, is out tomorrow. Just about to be out. It's out this week.
Supermassive.
Yeah. So it's the end of that story. Listen, we have a lot of books and I'm running out of steam, but like, you read the first four. This is the fifth one. It's real good. It ends in a really surprising and unexpected way that really surprised me when the girls pitched it to us. And I'm really excited for people to read it.
Can I say a little about Radiant Pink?
Please.
So the whole arc of Radiant Pink is meant to be an exploration of mental health and what it means to just forget it, ignore it, and try to find your validation through the perception of others. It's a very personal story. It speaks very much to the idea that it's okay not to be okay. And it's okay to just step back and say, hey, I need some time. As we go through this relationship with Eva and Kelly, and we address the fact that, you know, sometimes love just isn't enough, we really wanted to take these two characters and, you know, really explore the idea of a toxic relationship and the idea that maybe you don't find validation in happily ever after in your true love. Maybe you have to find it in yourself. And so that really is what issue 5 is about. Two characters who passionately feel very deeply about themselves, but are maybe at a place where there's just too much between them to allow them to go forward successfully. Really, I think the book turned out beautiful. I think the arc is amazing, and I'm really excited for Kyle to not kill them off in the Catalyst War, maybe, and see where else they could go.
I make no promises. Lives and dies and kills and dies and maybe lives.
Yeah, see, I just said that, and now he's going to kill them, so...
I think that that's everything, right? That's all the books we're doing at the moment.
And you can find all of that information over at blackmarket.la. Kyle, Ryan, Melissa, Matt, Michael, really appreciate you guys taking the time to be on the show today. And it's always a pleasure to have you on and to talk to all of you. So really appreciate it. Thank you.
Cool, man. Likewise. Anytime.
You've been listening to the Ranger Command Power Hour only on the Four-Eyed Radio Network. You can catch a new episode every other Saturday. Find us on the Morphin Grid at www.rangercommand.com. Follow us on Twitter at @RangerCommandPH. Like us on Facebook and Instagram at Ranger Command Power Hour. Ranger Command is also on Patreon. Become a patron by pledging as much or as little as you like every month and receive cool perks. By pledging, you are helping us make our show even better. Go to patreon.com/rangercommandph to learn more. Thanks for listening.